Harper Audio presents The Chilbury Ladies' Choir by Jennifer Ryan. Read by Gabriel Glaister, Laura Kerman, Imogen Wild, Adjoa Ando, Mike Grady, and Tom Clegg. Notice pinned to the Chilbury Village Hall notice board. Sunday, 24th of March, 1940. As all our male voices have gone to war, the village choir is to close following Commander Edmund Winthrop's funeral next Tuesday. The Vicar.
Mrs. Tilling's Journal. Tuesday, 26th of March, 1940. First funeral of the war. And our little village choir simply couldn't sing in June. Holy, holy, holy limped out as if we were a crump of warbling sparrows. But it wasn't because of the war, or the young scoundrel Edmund Winthrop torpedoed in his submarine, or even the vicar's abysmal conducting. No, it was because this was the final performance of the Chilbury Choir, our swan song.
"I don't see why we have to be closed down," Mrs. B. snapped afterwards, as we congregated in the foggy graveyard. "Well, it's not as if we're a threat to national security."
"All the men have gone," I whispered back, aware of our voices carrying uncomfortably through the funeral crowd. "The vicar says we can't have a choir without men."
"Just because the men have gone to war, why do we have to close the choir? And precisely when we need it most. I mean, what'll he disband next? His beloved bell ringers? Church on Sundays? Christmas? I expect not."
She folded her arms in annoyance.
"First they whisk our men away to fight, then they force us women into work, then they ration food, and now they're closing our choir. By the time the Nazis get here, there'll be nothing left except a bunch of drab women ready to surrender."
"But there's a war on," I said, trying to placate her loud complaining. "We women have to take on extra work, help the cause. I don't mind doing hospital nurse duties, although it's busy keeping up the village clinic too."
"The choir has been part of the Chilbury Way since time began. There's something bolstering about singing together."
She puffed her chest out, her large square frame like an abundant field marshal. The funeral party began to head to Chilbury Manor for the obligatory glass of sherry and cucumber sandwich. "Edmund Winthrop," I sighed. "Only 20 and blown up in the North Sea."
"He was a vicious bully, and well you know it," Mrs. B. barked. "Remember how he tried to drown your David in the village pond?"
"Yes, but that was years ago," I whispered. "In any case, Edmund was bound to be unstable with his father forever thrashing him. I'm sure Brigadier Winthrop must be feeling more than a trace of regret now that Edmund's dead." Or clearly not, I thought, as we looked over to him, thwacking his cane against his military boot, the veins on his neck and forehead livid with rage.
"He's furious because he's lost his heir," Mrs. B. snipped. "The Winthrops need a male to inherit, so the family estate is lost. He doesn't care a jot about the daughters."
We glanced over at young Kitty and the beautiful Venetia.
"Status is everything. Well, at least Mrs. Winthrop's pregnant again. Let's hope it's a boy this time round."
Mrs. Winthrop was cowering like a crushed sparrow under the weight of Edmund's loss. "It could be me next," I thought, as my David came over, all grown up in his new army uniform. His shoulders are broader since training, but his smile and softness are just the same. I knew he'd sign up when he turned 18, but why did it happen so fast? He's being sent to France next month, and I can't help worrying how I'll survive if anything happens to him. He's all I have since Harold passed away. Edmund and David often played as boys, soldiers or pirates, some kind of battle that Edmund was sure to win.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?